Thank you for joining us for the segment of Notable People with your host, Andrea Schwartz, where we introduce you to some notable people making significant contributions toward furthering the kingdom of Christ.
Thanks for joining me today on this edition of Notable People. My guest is Dr. Grant Scarborough, a native of Columbus, Georgia, and a graduate of the University of Georgia. He earned his medical degree in 2003 and completed his residency at the University of Tennessee in June of 2007. He directs Mercy Med of Columbus, a medical clinic which cares for everyone that walks through its doors, whether the person has insurance or not. Everyone is welcome. But Mercy Med does more than just address issues of the body. On their website, it states, Mercy Med desires you to be healthy, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, so you can live a life that brings glory to God who first created you. Never forget that you have hope in Jesus Christ. Dr. Scarborough is a husband and father and has graciously agreed to take time out of his busy schedule to be interviewed today. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Scarborough.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, when I first heard about your clinics, you and your partner were featured in a 2009 article in World Magazine. Then, a year or so later, your mother-in-law, Becky, Mrs. Jo Moorcraft, suggested I share your story with my listeners. Please tell us a bit about your upbringing, what prompted you to pursue medicine, and how the idea for your unique clinics materialized.
Well, I grew up in Columbus, Georgia, and I really grew up in a great family. My parents loved the Lord, brought up loving Jesus, and really never a time where I did not know and love him. So it was a blessing to have that. I had an older brother who loved the Lord as well and followed a lot in his footsteps, but I had a very good life, and I was, you know, middle class to upper class, and I went to the University of Georgia. While there, I got involved in Young Life, which is a Christian ministry to high school kids that aren't in church, trying to reach out to them, present them the gospel, in hopes of getting them back into a local church. During that time, I really began to love ministry. And for some reason, even during that time, the Lord seemed to bring me folks who were a little more down and out than the normal middle-class people that I was used to. And so I actually spent a lot of time with high school kids that were poor or into drugs or almost living on the street. Just enjoyed sharing the gospel with that group of folks. And not just sharing the gospel, but enjoy getting to know these individuals and hearing their stories and loving that one-on-one time with them. When I was in college, I actually had a biology degree, but when I graduated, I decided I would never go into medicine. I've learned never to say never. I'm going to do full-time ministry. And after college, I actually went on Young Life staff and was a church youth minister for about 2.5 years. During that time, I was taking some kids, kind of like how I was growing up, and we started going down to homeless shelters and different places, and I just really enjoyed ministry to the poor. And when my time was done with Young Life, I decided I was going to go in full-time ministry to the poor. I wasn't exactly sure what that looked like or how it looked like, and in Proverbs it says, an abundance of elders, counselors, there's victory. So I went to a friend of mine and sat down and shared with him my life and how I wanted to care for the poor and do ministry to the poor and do all those things. At the end of the time, he looked at me and said, I think you ought to go to med school. And I said, praise the Lord that the word says in the abundance of counselors, because I don't like your counsel. I called another friend of mine who was older than I and sat down with him and shared the whole thing with him. And at the very end of the conversation, he said, I think you ought to be a doctor. And I still wasn't convinced, and I really wanted to do full-time ministry to the poor, and medicine was just going to mess that up. And so I was really struggling and praying through it, and about 2 weeks later, I got a letter from one of my dad's friends that said, I've been praying for you, and I just thought the Lord is letting me write you a letter saying, why don't you go be a doctor? I was so frustrated. As crazy as that sounds, I had no desire to be a doctor, so I said, all right, Lord, I'll try really hard one time. And I'm not that smart, so when I don't get in, I'll go do what I want to do. I applied for med school, and I remember I got a letter saying that I was accepted, and literally, I was distraught. I was so upset. But I think I might have been the first person ever to get accepted in med school and be upset about it. And so I said, all right, Lord, I don't understand it. I'm not sure why you're doing this, but I'm going to go to med school. And that's really how I, upbringing to going to med school of how I got there. I went really kicking and screaming.
Well, I had assumed, obviously wrongly so, that first there was a desire to be a doctor, and then from that, reach out to the poor. But you're right, you're an unusual case in as much as you came at it just the opposite.
I did. My biology major in Georgia was actually, I was going to be a veterinarian. And then when I realized I really enjoyed ministry, my thought was, how do I get out here as fast as I can? And that was just to finish up a biology degree, and so I did that. But I didn't know back then the Lord was preparing the steps for me to go to medicine, even at that time.
Well, biblically speaking, health and medical concerns like education and welfare was never meant to be a function of the civil government. From your perspective as a doctor, how has secular medicine affected health and the way people look at health?
Reading Leviticus, the first physicians in Scripture were actually the priests. The Lord gave to the priest a very basic protocol, and all medicine nowadays is going to protocol. A very basic protocol. If you show up and you have a rash, it looks like this, you do this. And back then it just got my mind that, you know what, this is not a regular thing that I'm pursuing. I'm not just being a physician, but I can be almost a minister exactly as being a physician. So that goes a little bit away from the question of the role of government in this. I think it's complicated for a lot of reasons. If you look back in the old days, all the initial churches were Presbyterian Church, the Methodist Church. They all were very started by churches. They had this call they wanted to carry from the very beginning to do exactly what you said, do the health care. And now we've fallen away from it. I think there are a lot of reasons why we've fallen away. One is it has become astronomically expensive to do health care. Aspirin was invented a little over 100 years ago. You know, penicillin was invented a little over 100 years ago. So 100 years ago, if you really had a bad infection in your leg, you cut it off, gave them some bandages, and it wasn't that expensive. So it's gotten really complicated. You know, the healthcare plan today, it's a mess. But at the same time, I've watched people go blind because they haven't had healthcare. I've watched people have diagnoses of invasive cancer go untreated because they don't have healthcare. I've watched people lose their kidneys because they haven't had health care, lose their legs because they haven't had health care. And the answer isn't, let's do a national health care, but the answer is quite difficult, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, but it seems to me that on a local level, you've been involved in a solution to that. Share how Mercy Med operates and the other clinics of which you were involved.
Right, and I do believe this is a lot of the answer. I don't think it's all the answer, but I definitely think if Christians looked at it this way, it would be helpful. I love telling folks, but the greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And the second greatest is to love your neighbor. And my neighbor in Augusta was a lady, Miss Juanita, who was a sweet 80-year-old lady. And every time my children went over to see her, she gave them chocolate. And whenever I wanted chocolate, I'd say, hey, kids, why don't you go visit Miss Juanita and bring me back some chocolate? She was this wonderful lady that was so easy to love. If you look at the story in Scripture, the story actually goes, the man needing to justify himself saying, that who is my neighbor? And it goes along to tell the story of the Good Samaritan who found this man who was beat up, so he's physically hurt, he was robbed, he was financially poor, he was probably emotionally distraught, and that was the person that the Lord described as the neighbor that we're called to love. And so my calling is, I thought I'd go overseas to find that person, not realizing the Lord said, no, I want you to do it here in America. It's to reach out to those who are most hurt, most distraught, emotionally disturbed, all those things, and you take care of those folks. So we have opened a clinic and pretty much said everybody is welcome. I trained in Memphis where I saw this work. We started one in Augusta. And now I'm moving to Columbus, Georgia, where we're starting this clinic now. How it works is if you don't have insurance, we actually ask you to pay a little bit. We look at household incomes and federal poverty lines. It goes all the way down to most people pay $25. But we feel like it's important for them to invest in a little bit of their health care, put a little skin in the game. And so we ask them to do that, and no one ever has trouble doing it. Once you're in the system, if you have a little trouble paying, then we'll put you on a payment plan, and you might pay a couple of bucks a month, but we just feel like they really respond to our recommendations, really get on the medications if we ask them to pay a little bit. If you're homeless, we don't announce this, because if you tell everybody this, everybody becomes homeless. But if you're homeless, we'll see you for free. And what happens is some of the homeless shelters in town will call us up and say, Grant, we have this guy pretty sick. Do you mind seeing him? Absolutely, no questions asked.
It sounds wonderful, and it sounds just like what the church should be doing. But the obvious question is, how can you and your staff live and support yourself and your own families if that's how you're operating?
Well, we jokingly say you can consider us well-paid missionaries or fully paid physicians. And as a missionary, we are loaded. I mean, we're making twice as much as what missionaries make. As a physician, we don't make as much. We just don't, and that's okay. We feel like it's worth it. It's worth sacrificing the care for the neighbors, as Jesus described them, in our neighborhood. And so the clinic, it doesn't cost as much as to run because we don't get paid enough, but you still have to raise some money. So if you look at our budget, we can bring in about 43% of our budget through medical reimbursement. So if we see 10,000 patients and they all pay $25, that's $250,000. We can do that. But we have to write to some foundations. Most of the time, the hospital gets on board, because if we can say, hospital, we'll take all your patients coming to ER that don't have insurance, we'll see them. That's a huge benefit to them. You know, they get admitted for a chest pain because they weren't on their blood pressure medicine because they couldn't call for the doctor. Well, we see them. We keep them on their blood pressure medicine. They don't show up in the ER. It saves them money. So it's a win-win situation. In Augusta, we had one hospital. The hospitals combined made up about 40% of our budget, and then we came up with a little more than 40% of our budget, and then we had to fundraise for the remaining aspect of it.
Does anybody in the medical field or the insurance field or even in Medicare or things like that fight you at all? Or are you pretty much welcome because of your mission statement?
Well, some doctors think we're crazy, and I'm fine with that. I mean, it's the American dream, the American culture says, you know, make as much as you can for yourself. And so when someone fights a little bit against that gravity and says, you know what, we're going to forfeit some of our income, take care of folks who are less fortunate, they think we're a bit on the crazy side. There are some issues with Medicaid and Medicare, because if you charge someone less than Medicaid rate and you also accept Medicaid, it can be considered insurance fraud. So it does say in kind of documentation that if you make a good faith effort to find out their financial status, then you can charge them less. But no one knows what that means. And we even brought a Medicaid specialist in Augusta and said, are we doing this in good faith effort? And her response was, we really don't know what that means either. So, you know, I don't know. Medicaid really came down hard on us. They might find fault with what we're doing, but we are trying to make a good faith effort. Most physicians, I think, want to help the poor, but because of some of those laws like that, they're afraid to take in a few cases sometimes because they're not sure if they're insurance fraud or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're a little hard to get help at times. But most guys are very willing, most physicians are very willing to help out, speak to patients for it. So let me just call them up and say, I got this lady with rheumatoid arthritis. My treatment's not working. Would you recommend if I start this medicine, what I need to monitor? They're very receptive to that. So mostly we've got nothing but help, nothing but help.
Well, that's good, because I would think that by doing what Scripture directs you to do within the framework of your calling, that God would bless your efforts, and even your somewhat expected enemies would be at peace with you because maybe they don't want to do what you're doing anyway.
We had one physician who wasn't Christian at all, who said, listen, y'all doing exactly what you need to be doing. Let me know however I can help you. We get some of that, and some of our patients come from all walks of life. In Augusta, I took care of one of the main guy to the Hindu temple. He needed health care, and I asked him, I said, listen, why are you coming to a place called Christ Community Health Services of Augusta? And he said, of all the places we've come to, we've never felt more love than we have here. And so it was a great testimony to the staff of loving someone differently in hopes to present the gospel to them.
Right.
So most of the staff were pretty well received.
My father was a physician, actually a general practitioner who used to make house calls. And that's such a different paradigm than we have today. How has your clinic tried to recover the one-on-one personal relationship patients used to have with their doctors?
Well, it's funny. We want to do house calls as well, especially for those really in need. And we did that in Augusta a little bit. We couldn't do it a lot, but it's something special to go and sit down in someone's house with them. I remember we had this very bad asthmatic, and mentally she was slow. Just couldn't control her asthma at all. And we went out to her house and just went through her house and investigated, and her asthma machine, her little nebulizer machine, had mold all in it, which was only making it worse. And so, you know, there's something special about being in someone's house. I remember we went to someone's house who was dying on hospice, and just sit by her bed and pray with her and pray with the family, and it is just wonderful. In our clinic, we do try to take a little more time of our patients. You know, we believe, and most doctor's offices, I'm sure, agree with this, that the visit doesn't start when the doctor walks in. It starts with the very first phone call, that we want to proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord at the very first phone call. You know, my hope is that when I go in the next room, my patient isn't ready yet because my nurse has been praying with the patient. And so all the way back, I want them to be cared for and prayed for and loved on. And then when I get in there, you know, you do. You initially want to address the physical things because that's what they're here for. But in the process, you want to let them know that there's a temporary body and an eternal soul, and it all needs to be addressed. And so, you know, we try to learn about the emotional issues in their life. The lower socioeconomical class, they really have a higher percentage of mental psychiatric issues going on. And so when someone comes in and says they're depressed, you know, the next question you just have to ask is for how long? And then they go, well, for about 10 years. And the question you have to ask, if you have time, is what happened 10 years ago? And it's amazing how they will say, well, I've never really told anybody this before, but this, and this happened. And so it's just asking those couple of extra questions to find out really what's going on in their life to care for them. The other thing that I think is really important is that we are a clinic for the poor, but we don't have doctors rotating through. We want doctors here full-time because if Ms. Jones comes in the door, I want her to know every time she's going to see me. And so I get to know her. I get to know what happened 10 years ago when she first became depressed. I get to learn to pray with her. I get to learn that, you know, all the things going on, and hopefully with that relationship, I can share the love of Christ. You know, they can know, come to know Jesus or be encouraged if they already know Jesus. And so it's very important to have that relationship and to build that one-on-one trust with the patient.
Now, on your biography on the website, this is what it states. It says that Grant desires to see God glorified through caring for the poor and discipling young healthcare students to do the same. Is that difficult? Is it difficult for you to get students to have a heart for the poor?
Not really. in Augusta, we had residents coming through there pretty regularly. And most of the people that came to our clinic, now this might be why I wasn't really, is they knew what we were about. And so if you came, you realize we were a Christian ministry caring for the poor. And a lot of Christian folks who go into healthcare really want to do it as an act of service. And so when they see someone doing that, they realize that life, it gives them purpose in their medicine. And people love to have purpose in the gifts they've been given. And so I think it energizes them. I think it makes med school easier for them. I think it kind of gets them more excited about being a resident and say, hey, here's a guy really living his faith out with his patient. Wow, you can pray with the patient? Yeah, you can ask the patient if he knows Jesus or not. So most of the folks who come through are probably already Christian, and they want to see it lived out, and they get excited about it. You know, you train them, and then you tell them. You know, go in there and do it. And they'll go in and start sharing their faith, and they won't do it perfectly, but no one ever does, and, you know, God is gracious. And so it's a wonderful part of my ministry is to be able to train residents and students.
I imagine with the way healthcare has gone in our country, with Obamacare being, you know, shoved down people's throats, and just so much of the approach to medicine being secularized, I imagine a lot of Christian young people would consider healthcare professions, whether it's doctor or nurse or whatever, if they knew that on the other end of it, they wouldn't have to work within a system that compartmentalized people and separated their mental health and emotional health and spiritual health from their physical health.
I think that's the problem with not just physicians, but all of life, is the whole world has become so sexualized. And the question is, how do you glorify God with the gifts he's given you? And how do you find a spot? And you might have to say, you know what? I'm a lawyer, and I'm going to become a lawyer that doesn't make much money so I can glorify Christ in my occupation. I think that's an example we need to be setting up for everybody, you know, going to college and saying, you know, when you're done, let's find a way for you to glorify Christ. It's what Paul's a tent maker. He made tents so he can share the gospel. And our life should be that, you know, we take care of people, we sell insurance, we do all this to glorify Christ in our profession, and every chance we have proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord to everybody we run into. I do think med school takes that out of you a little bit. You know, there's a phrase back in med school that, you know, you try and get something done and you're in the system and it never really works, and we kind of say, well, you just can't push the elephant. And so mm-hmm. you just sit back and let the elephant do what the elephant does. And I think that wears on you on good times. And so if you do see, hey, there is another option out there. That's what happened with me. I was in med school, and someone gave me a book about a ministry in Memphis taking care of the poor. And I read it, and I said, wow, you can really do this and love Jesus and be a light. And so I went to Memphis to train just so I could be around like-minded people. I think exactly what needs to happen. It's a whole world view of teaching young minds that you don't go to college just to be a doctor. You go to college so that you can be a Christian who is a doctor and realize that they use their gifts to serve Jesus.
Grant, I know that I promised you that since you are en route from one city to another that I would keep the interview sort of short, but you've made it very full. My question to you now is, if people would like to help support your ministry specifically or begin one in their own locale and would like some advice and some help from you, how would they go about finding out more about what you do and contacting you?
Absolutely. They can. Well, one thing, if you want to start a clinic, you really ought to talk to someone like myself, or there's a organization loosely loose organization that with a lot of clinics like ours in it called the Christian Community Health Fellowship. And the head individual there is a guy named Steve Noblet. Great guy, loves the Lord. He's up in Memphis, and he would love to talk with you. My thing I would say before you start a clinic is that there are a lot of clinics that I started that have just these great administrators who love the Lord and want to do good. I would say, though, don't start it until you find that doctor, because no matter how good that administrator is, if your doctor doesn't agree to be there and see patients, it's hard to make it work. And so you need to find some doctor saying, you know what, I'm going to be there 4 days a week to see anybody that walks through the door. That doctor sees himself as a missionary. The office manager sees himself as a missionary. The nurse sees himself as a missionary. Everybody's on the schedule for cleaning the toilets. And in Columbus, Georgia, everybody's on the schedule for cleaning the toilets. Everybody's got to do the vacuum cleaner. There are times when we started a clinic in Augusta, I answered the phone. Of course, I did it in a high voice so that they wouldn't recognize me. Because I didn't want them to know that I was answering the phone. But you have to find that physician willing to be a missionary, willing to, you know, work outside the clinic on weekends and at night to make enough money to keep it alive. So you really need that. How can you help me in Columbus? One is I truly believe prayer. Oswald Chambers said, prayer is not the preparation for the battle, it is the battle. I really do love that quote, and I can tell you that we need lots of prayer. I know immediately we're trying to start a clinic, so all the details of construction on the clinic, all the details of hiring the right staff for the clinic and buying computers for the clinic and all this stuff, fundraising for East Braceland. You know, number two, we're doing demolition. If you live near Columbus, you can help with demolition, or if you have skills of carpentry or something nearby, I'd love you to come by and help put the building, Humpty Dumpty as I call it, back together again. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said earlier, we bring in 43% of our income, so some of that income, that's operational budget, has to be raised. You know, our budget for 2011 is about $400,000, so we have some fundraising due there. We've already gotten some from foundation. We're actually doing really well from the operational side, but we're in the process of getting a building, so it's hard to get started financially because you got to get a building and do renovations on it.
What's your web address so people can go to your site and then contact you that way?
www.mercymedcolumbus.com. And my email address is just grant@mercymedcolumbus.com.
Okay, and I hope those who are listening will take you up on your offer to talk with you and get some advice. Thank you, Grant. I appreciate it, and I have to thank the Scarborough girls who are in the back seat of the car as this interview is taking place. Thank you for your patience, and I appreciate you letting your dad share the important ministry work that he's doing.
All right, I'm going to let my girls say hello real quick. This is Jane. Jane, say hi.
Hi.
This is Anita.
Hi.
All right. They say thanks.
All right. Now we're done. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Grant, and it's been a pleasure meeting you.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Visit us on the web at www.notablepeople.org.